Hi, it's Tony Bruschi. When you're not enjoying our haunting episodes of The Grave Talks, I invite you to check out our true crime and disaster podcast, Dark Side of Wikipedia, with new episodes every Monday and Tuesday. Just search Dark Side of Wikipedia wherever you download podcasts. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of a recent episode of Dark Side of Wikipedia. In the hot summer of 1976, a killer lurked in the shadows of New York City. A killer that would take part in 8 separate shooting attacks and earning him the name Son of Sam. Who was the Son of Sam and what were the motives for his killing spree? Today, the dark story of David Berkowitz, Son of Sam, on the Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into a reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is the Dark Side of Wikipedia.
David Richard Berkowitz, also known as the Son of Sam and the .44 caliber killer, is an American serial killer who pled guilty to 8 separate shooting attacks that began in New York City during the summer of 1976. Berkowitz grew up in New York City and served in the U.S. Army before committing his crimes using a .44 caliber Bulldog revolver. He killed 6 people and wounded 7 others by July 1977. The killing spree terrorized New Yorkers and gained worldwide notoriety. As the number of victims increased, Berkowitz eluded the biggest police manhunt in the history of New York City while leaving letters that mocked the police and promised further crimes, which were highly publicized by the press. On the night of August 10, 1977, Berkowitz was taken into custody by NYPD homicide detectives in front of his Yonkers apartment building. He was subsequently indicted for 8 shooting incidents. He confessed to all of them and initially claimed to have been obeying the orders of a demon manifested in the form of a dog belonging to his neighbor, Sam. Despite his explanation, Berkowitz was found mentally competent to stand trial. He pled guilty to second-degree murder and was incarcerated in state prison. He subsequently admitted that the dog and devil story was a hoax. In the course of further police investigations, Berkowitz was also implicated in many unsolved arsons in the city. Intense coverage of the case by the media lent to a kind of celebrity status to Berkowitz, which he seemed to enjoy and noted by some observers. In response, the New York State Legislature enacted new statutes known popularly as Son of Sam laws, designed to keep criminals from financially profiting from the publicity created by their crimes. The statutes have remained law in New York despite various legal challenges, and similar laws have been enacted in several other states. Berkowitz has been incarcerated since his arrest and is serving 6 consecutive life sentences. During the mid-1990s, he amended his confession to claim that he had been a member of a violent satanic cult that orchestrated the incidents as a ritual murder. A few law enforcement authorities have said that his claims might be credible, but he remains the only person ever charged with the shootings. A new investigation of the murders began in 1996, but was suspended indefinitely after inconclusive findings. It's the Dark Side of Wikipedia. Welcome, everyone. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. Leave us a review there on Apple Podcasts. It helps other folks know that we exist. Help us grow in the rankings. Greatly appreciate you doing that and hitting that subscribe button. Tony and Sean joining you on today's episode as we dive into the dark story of David Berkowitz, known as Son of Sam, a name that probably a lot of us have heard, you know, thrown around there in television and movies and news and this and that. But how much do you really know about Son of Sam, Richard Berkowitz? Would he be a good housemate should you end up being cast on The Real World New York, Son of Sam edition? I don't know. We'll find out today. Thoughts?
It's funny you mentioned that, Tony, and a good morning to you when we record this. When you find yourself in a position of living by yourself, and then you look into living with a roommate, it's so satisfying. The rent that seems so high and so expensive, when you cut that in two, oh, you welcome a roommate with open arms. I only have to worry about paying this much. But if you're going to get a roommate, you probably wouldn't want to pick this fella, because even though I only have to pay $700 a month rent, not $14, I'm not going to die.
That is something I have never experienced, other than I've had my roommates throughout my life were either girlfriends or my wife. And obviously when it's your wife, it's not a roommate anymore. And
ever at the same time?
I've never had just like a roommate that was a roommate that was
never a girlfriend living with you while you were living with your wife.
No, that has not happened. I don't think that would go over very well. We're not of that sect of the religion. So that probably is not going to happen. But hey, it's 2020, so I guess anything's possible. At the time of our recording, this is airing in 2021, so maybe 2021 opens up that window. But I don't think it would work out. But I've never just had a roommate. I've never had like you as a roommate or any other just guy friend as a roommate or anything like that. So I've never been in the position like to search for a roommate for that purpose. Have you ever had a roommate?
Not in adult life.
Okay.
And I happen to live in the greater Nashville area, which if you've ever visited, it's very fun. It's very expensive.
Yeah.
Expensive. So if you don't want to live 50 miles out of town and you want to live short of robbing banks or selling narcotics or doing podcasts, you, how shall I say, it's a great life, but you got to pay for it.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, when you think of roommates, and we think of college, we think of situations like that, but do you really ever truly know who is going to live with you? Could they have been a serial killer? They may have worked at Publix, but they also just got out of jail and they're looking to restart their life. Hey, for rent, room, which those of you thinking to get a roommate now, hopefully you sure as hell won't, because you really don't know
who
you're going to be living with.
I guess your only bet would be doing a background check and getting the documents to do so up front. I mean, it'd be kind of awkward if you're like, yeah, hey, come on in, you be the roommate. And 3 weeks in, you're like, hey, could I get your social security number so I can do a background check on you? That would be awkward. That's where you got to like kind of do that shit up front. And it's understood at that point, okay, they're just being safe. If it's done like 4 weeks in, it's like they're suspicious as hell of all the killings that I've been doing. They're next.
What's interesting, particularly in this part of the country, is when you have so many musicians, you have so many artists, you have so many folks that kind of work gig to gig, which ultimately come to your town, insert city and state, pay $100 and you watch them for a couple hours. That's what's happening here, where you got all these folks that aren't on the road, so they actually need a place to live.
Yeah.
And that's where you have some roommate situations and some really nice places. But again, it's just, hey, you got some money, cool, let's live together.
And suddenly your roommate is Gary Allen. And you're like, didn't you do a bunch of songs a couple of years ago? Yeah.
Didn't we do a meet and greet in 08 in Omaha?
Like, yeah, I need a place to stay right now. Oh, that's interesting. Odd how that works. But
I laugh because I don't want to cry, Tony.
It's the reality. And I don't know what the Gary Allen situation is these days, but it's not surprising. I mean, it's amazing sometimes some of the folks I follow on social media or friends with that, you know, had some hits back in the day. And it's like, I'm not referring to Gary Allen at all, but just some, and I won't say names, where it's like, holy shit, like, I heard your song the other day when I was, walking through the grocery store, masked up, and I could, it was over the intercom between all the messages of how we're all going to die if we go down the wrong way of the aisle. Follow the arrow. And there's your GoFundMe, you know, to just live. It's like, what the fuck happened? But that's the thing. I mean, we're in such a crazy time right now where, you know, there's all those assumptions. We watched a movie the other night, and I played a game with Jen afterwards. We watched a movie. This is a horrible movie. If you're looking for a great, horrible, I wouldn't even give it a B. I'd say it's like a C movie. It's up there with like Troll 2 in terms of this is just a bad movie. It was on the Peacock Network or on the Peacock app. It was called Christmas Twister, I believe, or Christmas Tornado or something of that nature. And it was fucking horrible. But we watched the whole damn thing because you couldn't stop. It was a train wreck. And it was done just so poorly. And I said to her afterwards, okay, here's your options. You have the choice of either being the star of Christmas Twister, and this is going to be on your resume forever, and any other job you try and get in the world of acting, they're going to look at Christmas Twister and go, yeah, we have another C movie. You can be in Sharknado 8 next. That's your next gig. You know, you can do that, and you probably make 20 grand off of being in Christmas Twister. Or you can be the manager of Arby's for a year, and you probably make, you know, maybe 80,000 being the store manager of the Arby's. Which would you pick? And you get the notoriety with Christmas Twister, but you get, you know, all the curly fries you can eat and a lot of roast beef at Arby's. It was really kind of a tough choice. What would you rather do? I think I would probably pick Arby's. And it's not to knock at Arby's. It's just, you watch some of these movies that are portraying insane things and you're like, someone had to say this is a good idea. There's literally hundreds of people involved in the production of some of these things, and all these people had to go along with this going, no, let's do this. But I guess, you know, it was more so like, yep, we'd like to collect a paycheck, so I guess we're going to do this. And
you're saying that Christmas Twister doesn't bring household names such as Casper Van Dien, Haley Lou Richardson, Victoria Pratt, yeah. Of course, she played Addison.
Yeah, it was. If you're wanting a horrible movie, go and turn that one on over the holidays. It is fucking great.
When we're done with this show, I think I'm going to relive Christmas.
You want to survive the pandemic? Watch Christmas Twister. It's on Peacock. I think if you watch like 8 minutes of ads beforehand, you can go commercial free. So anyway, let's get back to the life of David Berkowitz and find out more about the intriguing story of that wacky character known as the Son of Sam this Friday on NBC. David Berkowitz was born Richard David Falco on June 1st, 1953 in Brooklyn, New York. His mother, Elizabeth Betty Bruder, grew up as part of an impoverished Jewish family and was a waitress. She married Tony Falco, an Italian-American, in 1936. After a marriage of less than 4 years, Tony Falco left her for another woman. In 1950, Bruder started a relationship with a married man, Joseph Kleinman. 3 years later, she became pregnant with a child to whom she chose to give the surname Falco. And within a few days of Richard's birth, Bruder gave the child away. Although her reasons for doing so are unknown, writers have surmised that Kleinman threatened to abandon her if she kept the baby and used his name. The infant boy was adopted by Pearl and Nathan Berkowitz of the Bronx. The Jewish-American couple were hardware store retailers of modest means and childless in middle age. They reversed the order of the boy's first and middle names and gave him their own surname, raising young David Richard Berkowitz as their only child. Journalist John Vincent Sanders wrote that Berkowitz's childhood was somewhat troubled. Although of above average intelligence, he lost interest in learning at an early age and became infatuated with petty larceny and starting fires. Neighbors and relatives would recall Berkowitz as difficult, spoiled, and a bully. His adoptive parents consulted at least one psychotherapist due to his misconduct, but his misbehavior never resulted in a legal intervention or serious mention in his school records. He attended public school number 123 and public schools number 77. Berkowitz's adoptive mother died of breast cancer when he was 14 years old. And his home life became strained during later years, particularly because he disliked his adoptive father's second wife. He lived with his father while attending Christopher Columbus High School, graduating in 1971, and college in a 4-year-and-a-half room apartment at 170 Dreiser Loop in Co-op City in the Bronx from 1967 to 1971. In 1971, at the age of 17, Berkowitz joined the United States Army and served in Fort Knox in the United States and with an infantry division in South Korea. After an honorable discharge in June of 1974, he located his birth mother, Betty. After a few visits, she disclosed the details of his birth. The news greatly disturbed Berkowitz, and he was particularly distraught by the array of reluctant father figures. Forensic anthropologist Elliot Layton described Berkowitz's discovery of his adoption and birth details as the primary crisis of his life, a revelation that shattered his sense of identity. His communication with his birth mother later lapsed, but for a time he remained in communication with his half-sister, Rosalyn. He attended Bronx Community College for 1 year, enrolling in the spring of 1975. In 1976, he went to work as a driver for the Co-op City Taxi Company. He subsequently had several non-professional jobs, and at the time of his arrest was working as a letter sorter for the United States Postal Service. During the mid-1970s, Berkowitz started to commit violent crimes. He bludgeoned his first attempt at murder using a knife, then switched to a handgun and began lengthy crime sprees throughout the New York boroughs of the Bronx, Queens, and Brooklyn. That's the preview. If you want to hear the full episode, be sure to subscribe to Dark Side of Wikipedia wherever you download podcasts and get new episodes every Monday and Tuesday. That's Dark Side of Wikipedia.